tobacco auctioneer. Let me give this hearing aid to my wife because it's already come off, and I don't really need them with this microphone, that's for sure. What I'm up here to do is to demonstrate for you all a tobacco chant, which is an obsolete thing, no longer in existence. They did away with it several years ago with the advent of a new procedure of selling tobacco, which is actually done by contract now. But to get your attention, I'll give you a real authentic tobacco chant. I listen 41, a bit of 42, a bit of 43, a bit of 44, a bit of 45, 46, a bit of 47, a bit of 8, a bit of 49, I sold American. 50, 1, 1, 1, 2, 2, 2, 2, 3, 54, 55, 55, RJ. Now, all I did was count numbers. And as I said, I'm retired. I've done this. I did this, I should say, for 40 years. And you know the strange thing about it? I'm originally from Kentucky, now live in Lake City, Florida. And for 40 years, we did this whole thing backwards. I used to go to Kentucky in the wintertime and Florida in the summertime. Now, I know that's weird. And after 40 years, I finally said to my wife, I said, you know, we need to change this thing around. So we changed it, sold our house in Lexington, moved to Lake City, Florida, and live here the year round and love it. Love North Florida. But to give you a little bit of history about the tobacco auction, it was a system that was done in tobacco warehouses all over from Florida to Georgia to South Carolina to all the way to North Carolina and Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, and a few other small markets like Missouri and Indiana and so forth. But primarily it was in burley tobacco that was in Kentucky and Tennessee. Most of it in Kentucky. In the flue-cured belt, which is this area in the southeast, North Carolina was by far the largest producer. Second, South Carolina. Virginia was probably third, Georgia, and then Florida. We only grew a very small amount of tobacco in Florida, like, I think 30 million pounds, which is not much in the overall picture. And I don't think they've grown more than probably 10 or 15 down in Florida now. But it's done under contract, and the companies know how much tobacco they want. They tell the farmers, they contract with the farmers grow it and take it to them and so forth. But this is something that used to be a very, very important part of all of these states that I have talked to you about. There's so much, no telling how many children have been educated from the receipts from the tobacco crop. No telling how many farms and homes have been bought from the money that they receive from growing tobacco. Now, am I advocating smoking? No, not at all. I never even smoked myself. And everybody always thought that was weird. How can you be in the tobacco business and not smoke? You say, you think I'm going to ruin my throat? No way. So that was primary reason that I never smoked. That plus the fact that when I was about 15 years old, Mom and Dad said, you know what? If you don't smoke until you're 21 years of age, I'll buy you the best watch that I can possibly get. So I thought, geez, that's a good way to get a watch. So I never smoked, and I got my watch. But I'll talk to you a little bit about the actual chant itself. And I got Bill over here is probably going to ask me a question or two, and I'll try to answer them, and I'll also answer a question or two from you a little bit later. But a chant, a tobacco chant, is not a thing in the world but calling numbers. I'll do it very slow for you. I'm going to start at 40, and I'm going to go to 45. I 41, bid 2, 43, 43, 43, 44, 45, American. Now all I was saying, 41, bid 2, bid 3, with a little mumbo jumbo in there that I don't even know what it is. It's just something that's part of the chant. You developed a chant. I did years ago. Well, first of all, let me tell you this. I grew up on a farm in Kentucky. We grew tobacco. Nobody in the my father never smoked. My mother never smoked. Had some brothers that did, unfortunately. But that was the hardest work you can possibly imagine, and that was in Burley Tobacco up in Kentucky. If you can imagine what it was like down here in Florida and the Carolinas and Virginia and so forth, where they had to go out and pick the leaves off of the plant, take them, this is backbreaking work. I mean, I don't think you could get anybody to do it anymore. I really don't. They could do it mostly by machines anymore. But it was hard, hard work. And I thought, geez, I'd go to the auction and I'd hear that guy up there running the sale and selling tobacco. And I thought, I believe that's a lot easier than growing it. So I decided I wanted to be a tobacco auctioneer. When I came out of the military, I thought, well, I had a job waiting for me at the post office. And it was a good job. My whole family thought I was crazy 18 months later when I left. I said, how in the world can you give up a security of a government job with retirements and benefits and all of this and tackle something that you have no idea whether you can do it or not? Truth of the matter is, I probably was crazy at the time. But I did it, and I enjoyed doing it. And it was so much fun and pleasure to do that I made the statement on many occasions that I've never met a person in my life that I wanted to trade jobs with. I loved doing what I was doing that much. It was a good paying job and it was a lot of fun. And we went, like I say, from Florida to North Carolina to Kentucky. And if you don't think those winters in Kentucky can get bad with 10-12 inches of snow, one day we sold tobacco, if you can possibly visualize this, 24 degrees below zero. We had to sell up one row and back, go into the office and warm. It was that cold. But we did. We sold it, got it done. Most everybody is enthralled with the tobacco chant. They wonder what you're saying. And like I said, it's really only counting numbers. But that's what got me hooked, is I used to listen. Maybe some of you are old enough to remember the hit parade on television. Well, I go back even farther than that. When it was on the radio, L.A. Speed Riggs and F.E. Boone that were doing the commercial, and you heard it on the radio. You didn't see it, of course. But I thought that was the most fascinating thing I'd ever heard. And then when I'd go to the markets in a little town in central Kentucky, I thought, wow, that is something. I did it for 40 years and loved it. Bill, you have any specific questions you'd like to ask?
Well, I was just going to say that a lot of people, when they hear the auctioneer, they think that his ability is based on the way he chants the bid, because that's what most people who are outside the tobacco community hear. But an auctioneer I talked to some time back said that the tobacco auctioneer, or any auctioneer for that matter, is really a negotiator, because when you've got two parties, you've got somebody who wants to sell something and somebody who wants to buy something. And the person who's selling it wants to get the most money for it that he can, and the person who's buying it wants to give the least money for it that he can. So the auctioneer is the person that gets them to come to a price that they agree upon. And what makes one of the things that makes a successful auctioneer is a strong chant that gives the buyers and the sellers confidence in his ability to sell the tobacco. But another thing is the auctioneer's knowledge of the tobacco. If the auctioneer knows what it's worth and knows which buyers are buying that particular grade of tobacco and how much they're paying for it, then they're going to put their trust in that auctioneer, the man who's selling their tobacco. And like Mr. Whitaker said, the chant adds to the excitement and gets the bidding going faster. Now, yesterday, Mr. Whitaker, you said something about when you sell tobacco, you usually start high and bring the price down until it sells.
That became a general policy, Bill, in the later years of the markets when the differential between tops and bottoms was very slight. and there would be days that we would actually sell tobacco in which there would be such a small differential it almost all brought the same money. It didn't make any difference whether the bottom of the stalk or the top of the stalk. But I'll tell you a little story that was quite unique. When I started out, it was dollar bids. Actually, way back, it was a quarter of a dollar bid. When you started, like 15 and a quarter, blah, 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 15, ha, 13, re, 3, re, $14. That was going from 14 to 15 at a quarter dollar bids. That changed in a few years after that, and everything was in dollar bid, dollar increments. And one of the funniest things that I can recall happening to me was the time that we were, and this was when we were still going up on the sales. I was chatting along, and the bag was bringing $90 or thereabouts. And I'm going 91, 2, a bit of 92, a bit of 3, 3, 4, a bit of 4, 95, 5, 6, a bit of 7, a bit of 8, a bit of 9, 9, 99, 9, and all of a sudden I thought, where do I go from here? I got to 99. What do I say, 100? Or what do I say, a dollar? Or whatever. And I actually stopped, and I commenced laughing. I said, what am I supposed to do now? I got to 99. Do I say 100? This same thing happened many years later when we were selling. The bagger kept going up, and it got up to, we're selling to $1.95. It actually went to 205. And when I was going down through there chanting, $2, first time I'd ever done it. Stopped and made a little talk about it and comments and whatever. But then it all was bringing the $2. It was just easy to say $2 as it was $1. What the heck? And it's 95, 5, 6, 7, 98, 8, 9, 9, 9, 9, 2, 2, 2, 1, 1, 2, 1, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 3, 2, 2, 4, 4, 5. And usually when you got above the dollar increments, you just stayed in the, like the evens, like 80s, 90s, 60s, 50s, whatever. You really didn't call. Like when they stabbed the bagger was selling for $1.50, most of the time that the warehouseman that actually started the pile of tobacco, he never even said $1.50. He'd just say 50 or whatever, you know, 60. It wouldn't make any difference, and I took it from there. But that's actually how tobacco was sold. You, as Bill said, you had three people that you had to satisfy. The farmer, which was the most important one to satisfy because you wanted his business. Secondly was the buying companies that were buying it, and it was all over the United States and even other countries had buyers on the market. You had to satisfy them, but you also had to satisfy the man that was paying me, and that was the warehouseman. 1964, I became a warehouseman, so I was paying myself, so to speak. But it was extremely fascinating, and my wife's got something on her mind. What? I'm sorry? Okay, I did that yesterday, but I was not thinking about it today. You're probably wondering how this tobacco was handled and so forth. Farmer brought it in sheets. Now, we're talking about here in Florida because that's where we are. We won't talk about Kentucky because that's gone. They don't do it anymore. So they had warehouses that had sometimes 3,000 and 4,000 sheets of tobacco. These are lined up in a row from one end of the warehouse to the other. We're talking 60 to 100 sheets in a row. And the warehouseman would be up front. He'd be here on my right, and he looked at a pile of tobacco, and he decided what price that pile of tobacco should bring. So he starts it. I take it from there. Behind me is usually a guy that is the person that backs up the sale, so to speak, for the benefit of the warehouse. Then there's behind him a ticket marker who is the person that's recording what I'm saying, what that company buyer grade he wants to put on it. Like as an example, some of the companies had three-letter grades. So he had to write like Taylor as an example. Taylor, he had to put a T on the ticket, write 4BX. Or 4CX or 4 something else, whatever. He has to do all of that while I'm done up the row and I've done got another pile of tobacco sold, and he's got to be able to hear me and record what I have just sold that pile of tobacco for. also what the company representative, the buyer, has put on it, the grade he's put on it, and so forth. Then it is packed up and sent to the factories for redrying and so forth. But when you go down one row and back the other, when you got up there, you'd stop and get a drink of water, right on back down the row and do it again. And then you do this for hours upon hours. When I first started out, we'd do it from 8:30 in the morning to 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Later, they cut it down. Sometimes it didn't work with 2.5, 3 hours.
And how many, got a question. How many buyers did you have?
Well, to begin with, we always had 10 to 12. They're on the other side of the row, and they're strung out, about like from this lady here to this gentleman over here. There's 12 people in there, and they're all elbow to elbow, trying to jostle for position, so to speak. And obviously, the person that's in the middle, the two or three that's in the middle, has got the best view of what's going on. And in later years, it got down to 5 or 6 buyers. It was only the major companies that were represented.
But the buyers were across the row of tobacco from you, and you had to catch their bids.
That's right. You had to have what I call peripheral vision, in that if I'm standing here and I'm moving along, this is about the pace we would move. I got to be able to see this man here, and I got to be able to see that man with very little movement in my head, very little. Because he's probably looking at me. If he's looking at me, that's a bid. If he's got 2 fingers up, that means that if I'm chanting 65, that means he's bidding 67. Now, if he brings it down like this, that means he was bidding 62. And all of this happening now in a matter of 4 to 6 seconds, because we made a sale every 4 to 6 seconds. And some days when tobacco was all bringing the same, we even got a little bit faster than that. I mean, we just had 205.5 American, 205.5 Brownie, 205.5 Taylor. They only chanted a bid one time and sold it because they all bring the same thing. Now I'll get to your question. They have the option of coming in as early as they want to and walking the rows, for instance, and it's a good question. Lots of times, certain companies were only interested in certain stalk position tobacco, certain grades of tobacco. And they had to walk around to find it. And sometimes they might walk a row without ever making a bid. But then when they got to theirs, they were going to be there ready because they were interested in that particular style of tobacco and grade and so forth.
And also the Department of Agriculture has tobacco inspectors who assign a grade to it. And that's plainly, as I recollect, it's marked on the basket,
it is.
Sheet of tobacco, so they know what it is. Well, we're running short of time here, Ms. Whitaker, so do we have any more questions from the audience?
I do want to answer your question before that you asked about tobacco being sold going down. In later years, it got to the point where you did very little going up selling tobacco. You sold it going down. And that was to pacify the farmer, because he thought his tobacco was worth $1.95 and probably was only worth $1.85. But the warehouseman was trying to make him think he was trying to get $1.95 for it. So he started at $1.55. And I, in my knowledge of knowing the pile of tobacco, knew it wasn't going to bring but $1.85 to begin with. So I'd start it, $1.95, $5, $5, $94, $94, $90, $90, $90, $90, $90, $90, $85, $5, $5, RJ. Because I knew it was going to bring it. But that again, is knowledge of the pile of tobacco and what it was
knowing
worth.
The tobacco. Okay, we had a question down here.
Yes. I'm sorry?
They could be about, I don't know.
Oh, they'd be, there's many different, a warehouse can be vary. The warehouses that I had in Lake City would cover about 60,000 square feet. And there was 3 of them. And we'd sell in one house and go to another one and so forth. But I would venture to say that the average row in my houses was, 250 feet, a little less than 100 yards, maybe close to 100 yards, right in that area. There's warehouses in Lexington, Kentucky, that were 1/2 mile long. Now, you didn't sell 1/2 mile. They broke it up in segments, and today they sold this section, and tomorrow they sold this section, and so forth.
We had another question back here.
Do you ever translate your skills into auctioning anything else, commodities, estate
Yes, I have. Back when I was young and trying to get, you know, finding something else to do in the off season, because as I say, this is thing, tobacco was a seasonal occupation. I try to sell real estate. I had a few auctions of selling farm commodities, like maybe 8 or 10 cows, a whole bunch of pots and pans, and whatever, you know. Yes. And it was fun. It was okay, but there was nothing that fascinated and got my attention like selling tobacco, because I loved that going up and down the road, the continual, I guess the rhythm of it and everything. You can't get any rhythm in selling 15 cents for a pan, 20 cents for a pan or something like that. You know, I mean, it just wasn't a challenge as far as I was concerned.
Okay, now we've got time for about one more question here, so.
In the quality of a leaf of tobacco, stalk position is the first thing. Because at the bottom of the stalk, it was called, as we called them, was fly-ins, which was X-grade. Or at the very bottom, when it had sand on it, was called P-grades, primings. Then the next grade up was X, which was like that far up the stalk. Then you got on up to the middle of the stalk, and that was C-grades, which is cutters. And then when they got from a stalk of tobacco, it was about as tall as I am. When they got to about here, from here on up, it was B grades. And even back for a long time, they even had T grades, which was tips. But it finally wound up being pretty much just three grades. That's bottom third, middle third, upper third. Eventually, that's the way it progressed.
Well, we're about out of time here for the tobacco auction, but let's give Mr. Whitaker a big hand.
Thank you.
And we're going to have Mr. Danny Sylvester up here in a minute.